Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight. End of the line, Joel says Musk is getting rid of front-facing likes and ability to retweet too. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's ability to retweet. He says he wants to remove the counts. That sounds like a Susan Wojcicki policy, you know, when they remove the dislikes from YouTube. The thing is, part of the mimetics of a tweet is, why are people retweeting it? Is it because it's good? Is it because it's horribly bad? And this whole tension between what we call the ratio, you know, it's maybe there are some people who are offended because they're constantly getting ratioed. That is, they're getting lots of replies and reposts, but not likes on their tweet. But that's because what you're saying is stupid. It's part of the epistemological process of Twitter to allow the truth to come out so that everyone knows we have found the truth. We have ridiculed this person for being wrong. We have praised this person for being right. Oh, here we think we ridiculed JF, but he was just trolling. This whole ratio thing is important. It's all part of the dynamic that makes Twitter better than other places, and that used to make YouTube good because we could see the dislikes. Unfortunately, Elon is going with all the regular. There are stupid people, and these stupid people need protection. That's the problem. They need protection for their feelings, and someone made a study, I guess, that said, ratio is associated with a lot of depressive feelings and people are not feeling good about their tweet. The thing, Elon, is if you follow human feelings too much, you end up having a crap platform like YouTube. He has to understand this. End of the line, Joel says, the fundamental appeal of propagation is being undermined and diluted. Exactly. And he's falling for the exact same things that Jack Dorsey, that other tech CEOs fall for. Oh, how do we make our platform more pleasant to interact with? The problem is, pleasant is not the goal, Elon. The goal is not the feeling. The goal is not satisfying people. The goal is the search for truth and the full expression of human diversity on the internet. If you don't go for this goal, you are appealing to a certain subsection of the population, and you're letting the low IQ, emotionally fragile of this world, determine the degree of containment of the public conversation. We can't do this. We can't keep saying to intelligent people, you cannot engage in the way you would want, with the transparency you would want, because there are stupid people around who can't take it. That's not how the internet works. That's always what's been great about the internet, is that it was elitist in a sense. It was a bunch of losers on the internet forever, but they were losers that were good in some dimensions. They had failed at lives, and at times they had made a second life on the internet, but they had done so successfully and they had created, yes, a meritocracy, new guy. There used to be a meritocracy on the internet. And if you don't give us the measures for this meritocracy to operate, the likes, the retweets, the numbers, because Elon wants to focus on numbers of impression, but it's a very deceptive metric. I still don't know, if I look at a 4 million impression tweet, I still don't know, is it an NBA star saying something stupid, or is it JF saying something super insightful? It could be both. I don't know the proportion of haters in the crowd. I don't know how much people are reposting in hate of the tweet rather than in like of the tweet. Terrible decision making by Elon here. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? I got a couple of personal questions sent to me, one by Super Chat. Low Mercury Tuna was asking, when you looked for a wife, did you first accrue a few willing women on standby, then picked the best one of those? Or did you go for the first one that agreed to make babies? Your advice regarding all that? You don't necessarily want to do as I did, because I was in a very special circumstance when I found my current girlfriend. I had decided that I didn't want any more woman in my life. And it was not a radical decision, like I will reject woman from my life, but it was a radical change for my life, because I had committed to myself, I will not seek woman anymore. I will not play the dating game. I will not try to sell myself. I will not actively seek a woman. So I was in a very different mood than usual, and you may not want to be in that mood. The reason I was in that mood is that my life was set, and so I was happy. I have reproduced enough in my life. I've done everything I wanted with my life, so looking for what is generally trouble. A woman is a whole shitload of trouble. I was like, this is not worth it. Why would I pollute my life? I'm satisfied with the state of my life. I could die tomorrow. I've done enough. I leave a scientific theory. I leave a very plenty genetic descent. I am proud of everything I've done. So I had decided to remain single for the rest of my life, or to accept women who approach me, but they have to approach me, and I'm not going to run after them. And so that's the circumstance under which I found my current girlfriend, who turned out to be a surprise across all dimensions, checking boxes that I had given up. I had given up the idea that in humanity there would be someone like this, okay? That is the current state with my current girlfriend. Not just little things that are cute about her or beautiful, just major. She is a major above many orders of magnitude above anything else I've known in the female genre. So, for example, I have never had a girlfriend that I can trust with Bitcoin keys. Never, 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 never. My Bitcoin keys have always been held against a woman. The main protection, the main risk to my Bitcoins have always been woman. She is a person of high intelligence enough, high emotional stability, that she checks boxes across the dimensions that are needed to be the guardian of Bitcoin keys. So the thing is, you don't give Bitcoin keys to one of these women who are totally emotionally oscillating. Some of them may have been high IQ, but if they're emotionally oscillating and they suffer from delusional disorders of all kind, who knows if God is going to tell them tomorrow morning to run away with my Bitcoin. So the little things that she regroups and puts together into a whole are magical. It creates a lot of confidence. For the first time, I can have confidence in another woman. So intelligence, emotional stability, capacity to handle Bitcoin affairs. And, you know, it's the first time also that I don't have this bubble of trouble, that I can trust that my girlfriend is not within my field of view, and that she's not like sucking dicks through the wall of anonymous males. I can totally have full confidence. The monitoring anxiety that I had to go through in my life, having girlfriend or wives that would require monitoring because they can go crazy, their emotional state would require monitoring because they can start being pissed against you, their loyalty must be monitored because leave them 5 hours alone and they're already talking to another guy and then using the situation to create jealousy. The monitoring that's needed just in terms of handling a woman who told you basically and who messaged to you that she's capable of false allegations, that she's willing to use false allegations against you to threaten the state of your rights. This is the amount of anxiety I've lived has chopped easily 10 or 20 years of my life. I'm going to die 10 or 20 years earlier because of this shit. I have none of this with my current girlfriend. So all of this to say, I found an exceptional girlfriend, but I don't know that the route that I've taken to get there is the route you should take. Because if you don't have children, if you're not happy with the current state of your life, if you do have to get going, perhaps you want to go into a more aggressive route. Because there are people who will stand back from the dating scene, as I did, and who will not find a woman. You also have to take into account that I have celebrity. I had mainstream coverage of my separation. No one gets this. I mean, even an NBA star doesn't get this. You know, will you hear about it the day an NBA star loses his girlfriend? Will they make a murder mystery around it? Will they have YouTubers? Some NBA stars get this, but not all NBA stars. There are NBA stars, they will lose their girlfriend. You'll never hear about it. So all of this to say, I was lucky and I was highly signaling. I am in a very high signal situation where the whole world was informed that I was single. Now you can, when you're in that the luxury of this position, you can step back and not run after a woman and not kneel, and perhaps one of quality will come to you. But if you're engaged in dating at the bottom or finding any sort of woman to reproduce, you might want to be a little more aggressive. And personally, what I tell to guys is if you want to get into the dating game, you have to invest effort. You have to roll through women. You have to approach a lot of women. You're going to have to approach 1,000 before you get one that's your girlfriend. So, and we're not even talking about a long-term girlfriend. You're going to have to approach multiple thousands of women before anything good happens to you. Raised Fist says, you are not out of the dating game when you broadcast insemination offers to the entire world. I guess you could say that. That I'm so much into the game. I'm so deep into the game that even when I'm on vacation, I accidentally emit sperm out of my being. Yes, I guess you could say that. So yes, that's my response to you, Low Mercury Tuna. And a member of the audience has written to me a very long message. I will read segments of it. But he was asking questions about dating and what's the approach. Considering your latest Twitter post, my question would be inspired by CRP. I was taking a lot of dating advice from his channel, but I also remember you had some instructions about dating on some online shows some years ago. Very interested in your experience and insights about this topic. Maybe you can tell more about your experience of picking up / meeting women and make a guide like you did with Bitcoin. Perhaps one day I can make a full video about it, but in general, just approach. Establish eye contact. If there's reciprocity, establish talk. And don't worry about failing. Don't worry about one woman saying, oh, this guy was awkward. Look at it. He approached me. Do it and just improve. Because, yeah, okay, she's going to say it's awkward, but what she thinks, given that she's not going to be your girlfriend, doesn't matter. You need to expand your radar, and you expand your radar by establishing contact. I don't have a preference. You can go through a dating website. It's shit. I've met shit women on there, but who knows? I mean, I've met shit women everywhere also. You can go in bars. You're going to have another class of women, depending on the price of the bar, depending on the level of luxury. But they're going to be predators, basically. But you're also going to find predators on the street and on the internet. So basically, there's not a single place where I can tell you it's the right place to find women. Of course, church may be a good place, but There's also lots of imitators in the church that are they're just confused people who ended up in the church. They're not that imbued by Christianity as you would want them to be. So ultimately, the territory is not important. You just need to approach, need to get into it and practice. Where to meet them, how to raise. Well, you just have to be interesting and you have to pull the best out of them. So a woman is kind of a lost soul out there who feels that she is the greatest thing on earth, but she's disappointed because she hasn't found a partner yet who can shine like a light onto her, who can make the best out of her come. So that's kind of your job. It's super hard. It sucks. At many points in my life, I didn't want to do it, and women were disappointed with me. It's very hard for someone like me, high IQ, to get with these 100 IQ women, or they're 105, 110, and they really want to have this intellectual conversation, but like everything they say doesn't make sense. And so at some point you abandon and they feel it. So you need to stay connected at their level and try to get the best out of them. They want to show, they want their best selves to pop out when you're there. Lots of compliments, lots of positivity, lots of acknowledging of what they just said, so you can repeat what they just said basically in your own words, showing that you've integrated it. It's basically the simple rules of customer service and human interactions. A general strategy on behavior with females, he asks for. I would say be very male, very alpha. That's my trick. Of course, there's other forms of charming women. You don't have to go my way. There's always a market. Whatever you could think of doing in humanity, there's a niche for it and there's a market for it. There's women out there, I'm sure they love being with a better male. often they will be the very fat, super high weight, just iron fist type of woman. I'm sure they love their beta male, their little beta male. But my in general, a beautiful woman of value wants to have an alpha male who is like showing both a very strong testosterone armor, but also showing the second degree empathic kind of, oh, wow, he's a sensitive guy on the inside of this armor. They want both of these levels. So you never want to show one level at the expense of the other, but they want a leader who will direct them in life, who will say, all right, we're going to resolve this situation this way. And they want that kind of lead, and they want to feel that, oh, but I also know a separate man inside of that guy who displays a lot, and I have a special connection with him, and he's ultimately a very sweet and super gentle man. That's the ideal place to be in terms of your behavior. How to pick up the one that you like and how to keep yourself from time wasters. The best filter I have found is talk about reproduction very quick. And they're going to generally let you know what's the time scale. Just put it, especially if you are tight on time or they are tight on time because of their age, you have to lay it out all out very soon in the conversation. I want babies. I think we'd make great babies, you and I. When do you think you would feel ready for babies? And that's it. I mean, you will filter out. You will be disappointed because there's a lot of beautiful women who are going to tell you, well, I don't want babies. But then it's your responsibility to say, all right, that's time wasting. A woman who truly has it in her to to dedicate any important part of our life to being a mother will never tell you, I don't want babies at all. You know, if she is a woman of quality, she will give it a weight. You know, she will process it in her head and she's going to be like, oh yeah, for sure, I want babies. Maybe not in that year, but maybe in that other year. Would that work? So no problem with negotiation, but you can totally extract this information very early in the relationship, and it will avoid you know, putting yourself in a situation where you will be emotionally destroyed, because it's very hard to abandon a woman that you've been with for a week. Like, oh yeah, it's so great, the butterflies of love, and even if she tells you, I don't want babies, the fact is the biology of the male is going to be such, you're going to want to stay with her because you're going to kind of have a hope. Now, this hope is well adjusted for the evolutionary situation of 1,000 years ago. No condom, no birth pill, no antinatalist propaganda. But in 2024, you need to learn to recognize the signs and get out and don't follow your emotions. Your emotions are going to tell you to just kneel and beg for this woman, but she just friend-zoned you by not wanting babies with you. Boiling Frog says, exactly, we're all betas 99% of the time. The alpha male thing is a lie. She needs to feel protected, not necessarily on top. Yeah, yeah. And when I say alpha, you don't have to be overly aggressive. You need to be assertive in decision making. Then he says, I'm also interested in your personal dating stories. Your phrase about chain fucking was pretty good. And I am interested, what were you going through and what were your usual routine of bar hopping? Well, my routine was just to go in bars in university town and I would spot girls that are alone. And when a girl is alone, she wants sex that night. So I would tell her about me and we would have sex and I would try to keep her number. But many of them would disappear very... The thing is, I've found it's really not productive. I wanted a wife. That's why I was doing this. But it's really not productive to be doing this. And your thoughts on how to not to be a nice guy and turn the tables so they were the ones coming to you. And is this the type of power dynamic useful in family life? In my experience, women are more of a decision maker and a dominant force in family nowadays. They are the loud ones, more active, and usually the ones who behave in the testosterone way. There are no men who rape women of conquered villages. Now, I understand the times are much more peaceful, but still, why do you think it's happening globally? Or maybe it has always been like that, just nobody spoke about it, and all traditional norms are social constructs or something. Maybe you also have some advice for not letting those women into your life or how to behave as a man to minimize the risks of becoming too soft and letting things go in the relationship. Or maybe there is no need for that. The reason you have assertive women growing across the globe is that women have increasing means of leverage. And their evolutionary history is such that they have never had such powers. But now you have the state telling them you're going to have food forever. And you have the state telling them you're going to have healthcare forever. And so at this point, and you're going to have social welfare, you're going to have safety net, you're going to have child healthcare, you're going to get child dentist, you're going to get child social welfare and child checks. Now, this whole empowerment of woman was the pursuit of feminism and was ultimately the replacement of the male provider by the state. As a result, women find themselves with a brain unable to make decisions about power, and yet they've been given a lot of power. They've been given a lot of power by doing something they don't even realize they're doing. They're hiring other males to steal money from other males. So what is this whole government, tax, police, family courts? What is this whole thing? This whole thing is a bunch of men who have been bought as beta cucks by the woman through their vote, and they're being paid for extracting wealth from the productive part of the population, which is what used to be providing males. So we steal money from the providing males and we give it equally to all women. Women have created their own communism within capitalism. That's what's happening. So you are saying they are assertive and testosterone-y. They're trying. They're really bad at it. Woman decision making is it's a Ponzi scheme, my friend. It's going to last. If it lasts 50 years, it will be spectacular. Because they are spending money on crap. They are making terrible real estate decisions. And at this point, many of the population have already been squeezed into apartment living, rent, and dependence on the system in full. They have no, they don't even have a little survivalist backpack or whatever. They really are reduced to, next week, if I don't get my check, I don't eat. So this system is unsustainable, and there's currently an exodus. I believe that Bitcoin is fully part of the exodus from this system, where eventually USD will be what it's being treated as, which is a food stamp. USD will become a food stamp. But they may sound testosterone-y, but they are not evolutionarily adjusted for it. So don't let them bullshit you into thinking that this is what they want. They don't even want this. They don't have an understanding of their wants. You have to deliver what they want and what you know they want. And it's a relatively alpha male. And by alpha, I don't mean brute. I don't mean violent. I don't mean controlling even. But assertive and confident, those are the qualities. And then he writes another paragraph asking me about the letter I sent to my girlfriend saying that we needed to make babies quick, that I couldn't subscribe to this relationship if there wasn't baby-making promises. It's quite impressive to be talking about this letter to me today because we are in the period of the year where the fruits of this work that I've done and that we've done back then is paying off. So he's asking me, is that an aggressive letter like this that tells the woman already, I want babies? Is that something you recommend as part of the dating process? I don't. You have to have something equivalent, but you have to understand also that my position is a very special one. Women fall in love with me before they even talk to me. Because I'm a public person, because I have this microphone, women fall in love with me through the process of the internet. And so I can do something in advance that in a normal encounter, you wouldn't have the chance to do. The woman, if you say that as the first sentence to a woman at a bar, maybe you're going to get lucky, but most of the time you're just going to seem unfit and unadjust for relationships. But you do want to push baby making as a subject early in the conversation, but you don't have to go as aggressive as I want. I am in a very special situation. Woman who contact me can have heard my voice for 3, 4, 5 years. Can you imagine the biology of it? There's nothing like it. There's no woman out there at a bar that has been going to sleep with your voice in her ears. There is for me. So I am in an exceptional category, benefiting from exceptional luck, because when I look at my current girlfriend and just the perfection of her being for me, at least, and if not objectively, I would argue, the fact that she is a dream wife, I don't think that many people can dream of this. And it's part of the risks I've taken in life. On the one hand, I can never get employed. On the one hand, I was on the street a couple of years ago. If it wasn't of my mother taking me back to our house. I was on the street, my reputation ruined, no money. That's the risks of public speaking, but the risks also comes with rewards, and I'm happy that I ended up getting rewarded with a wonderful being to continue my life with her. It starts with positive consent laws for sex. It ends with state licenses for heterosexual reproduction. They have a campaign here. I'm so excited to unveil our new campaign. It's partnership with the creative agency M-Attack. I'm asking for it. Let's change the law to require a clear yes to sex. That's ridiculous. Because a clear yes to sex, you don't even have a way of factually assessing. If you require by law a clear yes for sex, you're going to have everyone saying, oh yes, Your Honor, I did hear her. She said yes. Now what? Now you need a recording. You need an audio recording if you want this to be valid. This is how you step into eventually. Well, okay, but what about AI? Okay, well, AI is a problem. We can make fake audio recordings. So ultimately, what's the use of this law? It's to register the act of heterosexual sex with the state. It's to ping the state when you have sex. And because if the AI can modify the audio, then what's the next step? A statement under oath in court? At this point, you're asking for a license for sex. That's what you get. Send this to someone on the edge of understanding Bitcoin. Jack here, the Bitcoin enjoyer, makes a good speech in Spain about the arrow of time. You can think of the blockchain as an arrow of time in and of itself. And there are mechanisms that ensure that you can't go back into the past. You can't go too fast forward into the future. There is a mechanism that ensures that blocks get added one by one, and therefore there is an arrow of time. I like his philosophical approach to what is time. What is the blockchain ultimately? It is partly a mechanism for the invention of a time on the internet. And time is relative. You can be at many places of the planet. And so you have a problem that light can travel very quick in fiber optics cables. You have a problem that what happens when one person in Asia decides that the block has been produced and one person in America decides that some other block has been produced. So consensus and time are intimately related. And the solution of Satoshi Nakamoto is ultimately the hash. So you cannot add a block before you have the hash of the previous block. So you can't go back in the past. The hash only goes into the future. And then the waiting period of 10 minutes makes it so that you can't add two blocks one after the other within 50 milliseconds. So you cannot have an event of two blocks being added. I like it. You know, much of programming isn't technical beauty. Much of programming work is the dirty, mechanistic aspect of loops, reinforcing each other, playing just frequently enough, but not too frequently as to bug the processor. Much programming is this. I find that, you know, being a coder in many projects, I find that the young people have a great difficulty understanding they are programmers, and their block is when I ask them to just make a function that refreshes slower. Just make a function that gives a 500 millisecond wait and go slower. You know, instead of playing your animation directly, instead of connecting everything so that it skips into my vision. Just go slow. Detect the movement. Launch a function. Give it a 500 millisecond break. Launch the function. Make it so that it can't run twice. They have great difficulty with this, but sometimes it's exactly what's needed to have this good feel that people have when they interact with a UI. California moves to expand zero down interest-free home loan program to illegal immigrants. Listen, they are going to take your house and they're going to give it to black people. That's what's happening. A controversial bill that would let illegal immigrants receive the same kind of home buyer assistance as U.S. citizens has advanced in the California state legislature. So what happens? These illegal immigrants are in no way incentivized at paying their home. They are in such an advantageous state. The state has given them right to occupy those homes. So now the market becomes super costly because the state is creating this loan money that's housing people, and you, as the stupid white person who wants to respond to their obligation, you pay your loan. So in the loan, they add a little interest rate onto your back that's meant to pay for the illegal migrants buying of your father's house or of your cousin's house. In the end, America is headed toward this South African style ownership reclaims against white people. They will do it through all sorts of hoops and they will find nice ways of framing it for you. But this is all reparations. It's all the same thing. It's all, we don't want you white people around anymore, or we're going to make your life so hard that we basically live onto your energy. Rodilacid says, well, I guess it's better if they pay a mortgage than if they send that money back to Africa or Mexico to some family back there. They're not going to pay the mortgage, bro. You are buying the pudding here. You are buying the bullshit. They're not going to pay the mortgage. They're going to live in the house. They're going to reduce its value. The bank will end up sponging some of it. The state will end up sponging some of it. They're going to have lived the whole life without the intent to pay. I mean, white working people have a hard time paying their mortgage. Do you think that the illegal migrant who got it for free will be paying his mortgage? People were noticing a couple of days ago, Michael Jackson, They Don't Care About Us. You may not know that the song has been censored on prominent platforms like Vevo and YouTube, robbing it of one of its central messages, Jewish control of the music industry and exploitation of its artists. Fascinating. I've rewatched the song. I remember seeing this video clip when I was young. Michael Jackson in a prison suit. I thought it was some kind of messaging when I was young about black people being imprisoned. But when I look at the words, it's, they don't care about us. And I think Michael Jackson dressed it as a prison-themed song. But the prison isn't a real prison. I think the prison he's describing is the prison of black artists in a Jewish-controlled system. Because, yeah, there are these words at some point where he says, Jew me, sue me, eventually K-word me, and even the K word rhymes because he says, K word me, don't you black and white me. So he's saying, I don't care if you do this. I don't care if you do that. I don't care if you do this. And among the things that he doesn't care about is being Jewed, which perhaps means that Michael Jackson was very conscious of the ethnic separation that exists in the music industry, where wealthy Jews are exploiting black artists under contract and they have too much control. And perhaps that this song in which he says, what I'm trying to tell you is they don't really care about us. Perhaps he's talking to black people about Jews. That's a very interesting possibility. I think it's what it is. Billboard Chris was reporting a story about a trans person who committed suicide after having their dick chopped, basically. I have a gaping hole in my genital area with my colon spilling out. Disgusting. And a ring of scar tissue blocking most of the entrance. If the colon cannot discharge, that leaves it with severe blockage, which then could turn and is likely expected into blood clots, followed by death. I have already reached the stage of blockage. What hurts me the most is the loneliness and the inability to find a partner. I can't have a normal sex life. I'm a loser, and I probably deserve this deception. This is what I get for messing with nature. Mankind is destructive, and I self-destructed. I just wanted friendship and love. I wanted life to be easier. I wanted to be a woman since I'm 15. I wish I had the knowledge that I have today. I was a confused kid with no identity. I wish I could have done everything different, but it's too late now. I'm royally screwed. Dr. Thomas Satterwhite and Dr. Maurice Garcia, both in California, who are my original surgeons, have basically killed me. With accessory to my death is Dr. Miroslav Dorjevic, Dr. Rajveer Purohit, Dr. Rachel Bluebon Langner, and Dr. Jess Ting, who all refused to help me despite having letters by one psychiatrist and two clinical social workers recommending reversal surgery and my detransitioning. Rip Yarden says, Billboard Chris, I'm terribly sorry our society and the adults who should know better failed you. Gender ideology is the root of this evil, and we are going to eliminate it. You know, they commit suicide a lot before the surgery. They commit suicide a lot after the surgery. Can we finally get the facts on this? Does your surgery even improve anything? Because I see so much despair in this population when they realize that, holy shit, all I have is an injury. Like, you've just drilled a hole in my skin. This is not a vagina. Dino Logovic sends a super chat. He says, is chopping your brain up also not a good idea? Any research into this? Generally, when nature gave you some parts, you need them. It's amazing, the cuckoldry of Elon Musk. His way of endorsing memes and then deleting his tweets. Here, he endorsed a meme that was very accurate, and his statement was merely accurate. And someone else was saying, no lies detected. You are witnessing the biggest act of cuckoldry in human history. An entire civilization willingly giving away its land and woman because the alternative is to be mean. That is a reference to white replacement that's happening right now in society. It is a proper description of our society. We are letting an invasion happen without fighting back. So we are legalizing the invasion, basically. And truly, the alternative to it would just be to have a sense of ourselves and to say, oh yeah, you know, I'd like to continue living among my own white people, you know. That would be the level of mean we need. We would need to be just that mean to be in a better position demographically. But we can't even have this. It's totally accurate. Yet Elon Musk deletes. And people are saying, why do you delete Elon Musk? He got the call. Did he get a call? Someone was saying the call from Jonathan Greenblatt, and you have two options: accept or accept. Oh my God, that must exactly be what it is. Elon Musk got the call. There were two options: accept and accept, and he took the call. That's what happened. Also, you know, in a single day to have two cuckoldry of Elon Musk is so sad. Elon Musk knocks Mackenzie Scott, blames super rich ex-wives for the downfall of civilization. Musk appeared irked by how the ex of billionaire Jeff Bezos has been spending her money in a since-deleted post. So what was happening today, Elon? Elon was feeling free. Elon was feeling truthful. But that lasted only 30 minutes. How do you have two different things where you're right? You're right, Elon, on your analysis. And yet you delete them. What does that mean? And to Elon, I would say, look at me, Elon. I'm freer than you. I'm richer than you. I'm richer than you, Elon, because you own nothing. You think you own something. They label you as the richest man on earth. They give you all this paper, but you haven't even bought your liberty yet. I bought my liberty before anything else. And you have to do this, Elon. Bitcoin can help you do this, among other things. You have to buy your own liberty, because I can say I'm freer than Elon. I don't have to delete these tweets. I can make a graver tweet sometimes, and I won't have to delete them. In a Wednesday post, Musk seemed unreasonably invested in how Scott has been spending the billions she was awarded in her 2019 divorce. Responding to an ex-user whining about Scott donating to organizations that focus on issues of race or gender, Musk declared super rich ex-wives who hate their former spouse should be listed among reasons that Western civilization died. Oh, I agree. You have, there is something in capitalism that money shouldn't be spent by people who can't have the success to obtain that money. And that our spending of this money is totally anti-civilizational. Because our civilization works well when people who had the brilliance necessary to attract that money to them can spend it. She didn't have the brilliance. She married the guy who had the brilliance. Now, I'm okay with the conception that marriage implies a duty of care, but not a duty of sharing the entire economic wealth worth a part of America's GDP. Not at all. And so when she makes decisions with that money, she has a brain that is not fit to handle that amount of societal influence. She's making the wrong decisions, and she's funding all of these enterprises of hate against white people, ultimately. Because trickle down, follow the money down the drain. You'll see it trickle down to some academic who's making some research about race. And of course, it's going to be disadvantageous to white people. Sable says, BTC is tanking. Sell ASAP before you lose everything and have to live in a dumpster. Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you kidding me? No, I mean, BTC will fall a little bit, perhaps. But We are not even begun yet. We are not even post-halving. This is the quickest rise we have seen in the history of halvenings. So calm down, people. If you guys are getting nervous. We've just touched the all-time high. We've just touched an all-time high. It's not time to sell at a previous all-time high. The all-time high is always surpassed. Every halvening, after the halvening, not before. MI5 says, Ivar Cummins, the fat emperor, uploaded a video outlining the background to all this crap that was planned for decades. Climate change, digital currency, mass immigration. They are all pieces of the same terrible puzzle. The title, How the World is Run, my recent talk from Southampton Public. Okay, I'll keep that in note. I don't know what's the statement in this video here. I'm going to...
Here for a short time, it's the...
There you go. We have these ads. I'm going to bookmark the video and check it when I have time. I don't know what's his statement about all this. Yeah, I do think that there is a coordinate attack against Western civilization. Sometimes I think that these people tend to be too paranoid about certain things, like digital currency. They're totally alarmed at this. I think the world looks good. The world looks good for someone who opposes to the takeover of civilization that's happening, because we have the freedom of speech to talk against it. We have the freedom of development that allows creating things that are truly decentralized, like Bitcoin. All in all, civilization as a great resistance movement that is possible still, and you should be thankful. I mean, you didn't have a resistance movement possible under monarchic regimes, under all sorts of authoritarian, despotic regimes of tribes that have existed forever, since 7 million years. You are at a special moment of humanity where you do have some ways of escaping the system, and that's desirable. And even we're using the tools of the controllers against them. Like, we had the YouTube era of non-censorship. We could talk. We have the Twitter era of non-censorship. We can meme. We have the Bitcoin era of free Bitcoin, and we can transact. That's all very beautiful. John Drake says, JF, set your VPN to Albanian and your ads will go down to almost zero. Wow. That may be the trick of the century. Act in every way Albanian. How does an Albanian click through? Like, how do I avoid detection by advanced AI that would detect this guy is not totally Albanian? You have to be the Albanian. You have to think, I'm poor. I'm in a shack. I'm on a Pentium 5 and I'm clicking on these links. Okay, I'll try it as perhaps the best ad blocking strategy I've ever heard. What do we have? Trump has been declared victorious. Nikki Haley is retired. Excellent news. So we will have a Trump-Biden confrontation, unless some insurrection shenanigan can be pulled by some judge or whatever. I think we are headed toward a true confrontation of Donald Trump versus Biden. I think Trump has a very good chance to win. Things are looking good on this side. J.K. Rowling reported to police for hate crime. Transgender broadcaster India Willow Bai accused J.K. Rowling of a hate crime for misgendering her on X. That is definitely the end goal with these hate speech laws. They want to let the private citizen go at rich people or public personalities to shut down speech. The transformed wife says the happiest, most well-adjusted kids come from families with loving parents that have strict rules for the household. We were strict parents. Many told us this. We wanted children who obeyed us, and we wanted them to be protected from harm and evil. They all grew up to be well-adjusted. We also taught them to be led by truth rather than by feeling and emotions. Some have apologized to us for saying we were too strict. They now know we were right. I have read that it's better to err on the side of being too strict rather than too lenient. Children feel protected and secure with strict boundaries. Yeah, I agree. What I find with children is you need to coach them on every aspect. Like, you need to shape their behavior. It's like, no, you don't yell at this moment. No, you don't do a crisis here. No, you don't do a crisis there. And it's a constant work like this to sculpt the human mind, to understand, okay, I can't create trouble anytime. And what I find through observing children and my teaching to them is probably a lot of these crazy exes that I've had, probably they weren't. They weren't treated strictly. There was not a father around to say, hey, no, you don't do a crisis here. No, you don't do capricious demands here. No, you don't get this extra food tonight because you've eaten enough. And I think that perhaps the reason they were so insane is that they were not imposed, they were not sculpted down to an elementary wellness of some sort. And so they had these capricious demands at all time and wanting more than the world could give. We have a grandma here on Fast Forward. This is the future of grandma. Like a talk. Oops, the song is a little hard. Walk it like a talk it. Walk it like a talk it. Walk it like a talk it. You walk it like a talk it. Walk it like a talk it. Walk it like a talk it. Wow, this grandma is deciding to go outside. Doesn't matter if it takes 30 minutes. Walk across the window. She's advancing one step at a time. That is courageous and brave. I love how the Bitcoin crowd has totally abandoned suddenly the not your keys, not your coins slogan for a few months so we could let the noob ETF money in. Are we all just going to wait for billions in ETF money to vaporize somewhere before we bring it back? You know, it had been an established thing that the Bitcoin community was talking about on an everyday basis in previous bull runs. Not your keys, not your coin. So all those people who are pouring money into the ETFs, don't have control of these keys. Is there a potential one day that these seed words are known or that they are discovered or that some employee gets access to them? I'm scared. I'm scared because not your keys, not your coin is exactly what everyone is going to say once if that money disappears. Can you imagine like a big fall where hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin get stolen or they are lost or there's some bug? Wow, that would be extremely sad. Alan Kohler says, Bitcoin is not a Ponzi bubble. It's worse, an insurrection. You got it right, Alan Kohler. That's exactly what it is. Now, this is good journalism. This is someone who truly gave it a thought and realizes, okay, it's unfair to be calling all of this a scam or it's not a scam. People are making money off it. It's changing the financial world forever, but it is definitely an insurrection. Chef Marv says, I buy BTC ETFs for swing trades, not for hodling. I don't know what's the function in swing trades. I don't know this domain, but I'm glad you are if it has a function for you. BlackRock, meanwhile, files to add Bitcoin exposure to their $17.6 billion global allocation fund via the IBIT ETF. This is when automatic money goes into BTC. This is where it starts being beautiful. Because they're just declaring, okay, Bitcoin is going to be one of the things that we buy with this fund. We're going to get 2-3% of it. But 2-3% of these funds forever, and as the fund grows, you send more to Bitcoin. This is flows of money being headed toward Bitcoin. Unquestionable, stable money of managers that don't care about selling. Beautiful. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, will we see a noticeable mimetic crash of BTC if many people set auto sell at 69K or 69,420K? Who knows? I tend to think there are players in the market who would like to short and who would like to or long at a special moment, and they would like to go against the grain, and they might use a mimetic opportunity of that sort to launch a planned campaign of that sort. But I tend to stay back and not try to 6D chess these guys, because it's a bunch of scammers and market manipulators ultimately. It's not what I do. I have no power to predict what they will do. What I know is if they have any such power to drop the price at a specific price like this and then and laugh about it, I know that I can huddle through any sort of crap like this they might pull. And I know, you know, that's where the philosophy of not being leveraged, not having much dependence, not having big bills, not needing money, owning your stuff, owning your Bitcoin, owning your keys. This philosophy is precisely so I don't have to care about these little geeks of the internet. I don't care about them. As a last news item, this seems very interesting. Just finished this book, Bad Therapy by Abigail Schreier. This is one of the most eye-opening books I've ever read. It's a must-read for any parent, any teacher, and should be required reading for any school administrator as well. The book dives into trying to figure out why kids are having so many mental health problems, when there are so many resources devoted to improving mental health outcomes. You'd think that if we had a good handling of mental health, you'd think that the more money we throw at it, we fix problems with it. But we don't. Because our psychologists and our special educators and all these crappy positions in schools, they are not measured by success. They don't have a unit of success. If I'm on the market, I can know if I'm a good trader or not, because if I make money, I'm a good trader. And if I don't make money, I'm a bad trader, and I better not engage in trade. There's no such thing for psychologists. A psychologist is good by virtue of what? A psychologist is good by virtue of they have a diploma and they've been staying there and being paid forever since they had this diploma. There is no... Yeah, the patients are running the asylum, says DK Shadow. That's another problem, which is that the school of psychology is a sponge for mental disorders. That's another problem. But there is no unit of success, no meritocracy. So you end up having people who will create and see infinite amounts of problems and not solve it because they're not rewarded for solving them. James says, I'm not sure why Iraq is not fixed yet. We gave them billions of dollars of bombs. Yeah, that's a good analogy. There are certain fields of human accomplishment that are fundamentally not aiming for success. In fact, they are specialized in failing, and they are rewarded for failing. Anxiety, depression, suicide, etc. are all higher than they've ever been with kids, even though their lives are arguably better than ever before. It just doesn't make sense. A few key takeaways from the book. A constant attention on how our kids are feeling or thinking is causing negative outcomes. Constantly ruminating on your emotions and how you feel negatively impacts your mental health. If all you do is focus on your emotions, you are destined to be anxious or depressed. We incessantly ask kids how they're feeling, if they're happy, how their mental health is, etc. And this is creating kids who think they're fragile instead of resilient. Trying to solve every problem for kids has caused a generation who can't do anything for themselves. Generation X were told to suck it up, or you live, or rub some dirt on it all the time. many of us came to the conclusion this is bad parenting because our feelings were neglected and we vowed not to do this to our own children. Because of that, kids immediately over-dramatized everything that happens to them, making mountains out of molehills and thinking the world must revolve around their emotions and feelings. You develop confidence and strong mental health by doing things, not by thinking or via therapy. You can't think your way out of anxiety. You don't gain confidence by analysis of your thoughts or mental health issues. You gain confidence and eliminate anxiety by doing gradually more difficult tasks, excelling at them and realizing you are competent and capable. The non-stop attention therapy gives to these small, common emotions we all feel blows them out of proportion to their seriousness. Not talking about genuine disorders here, just normal anxieties that millions of people go to therapy to try to avoid. One of the best ways to decrease your happiness is to chase it. Our society constantly tells kids they should be happy and asks them if they are. Happiness isn't a state you should be in 24/7. That's not realistic. Joy and bliss aren't permanent states. They are fleeting. Contentment, stillness, and being even keeled are much better goals to aim for mentally. The happiest, most well-adjusted kids come from families with loving parents that have strict rules for the household. This one really set off the confirmation bias in me. I feel really blessed we have two well-adjusted middle school kids who do great in school, are very respectful and well-mannered, and we barely even need to parent them. But for years, we were very strict with them. Bedtime, family rules, how we do things, etc. The in-laws and lots of friends thought we were totalitarian. In reality, we just had high standards. And it's really paying off right now. I found it really interesting that strict rules equals happy kids. Makes sense, though, as kids need to know what their boundaries are. Finally, constantly surveilling school-age kids about their mental health causes more issues than it solves. Mental health resources is big money. Districts need to validate all the resources allocated toward mental health, and they often do that via surveys. Asking kids non-stop questions like, have you thought about self-harm? Have you thought about suicide? Have you been so anxious you can't get out of bed? Of course, will cause these things. Which is why I've always been saying here on this stream, careful, guys, we are in a world of overdiagnosis because the economic incentive is to diagnose because if you have an official diagnosis, then you get money, either from the health insurance company, from the government, there's money flowing. So you have to make the case that there's more and more problems in the kids of your school. And the impact, the diagnostic impact is never tested and evaluated. We may be giving diagnoses to children today that are as hurtful to their lives as if we were giving them cigarettes. It might lead to just as much cancer in their lives. And we're like, oh yeah, you are autistic. Oh yeah, you are bipolar. You are this, that. And the validity of these diagnoses is never evaluated. Their positive impact on people's life is never evaluated. We should make laws that are treating diagnosis as a pill. You wouldn't give a pill to any children. You wouldn't give a pill if you're not absolutely certain that it's truly to the benefit of the person. You should do the same with diagnosis. Never give a diagnosis if you think it could hurt the person. And because we have so little data on how much improvement is actually possible through psychology and therapy, we should just stop diagnosis of children. Develop the science of it, develop an understanding, and then there's going to be some disease that are worth diagnosing. And there's going to be some disease that are totally hurting the child. That is it for tonight, Buzz. Thank you so much for being with me, and I'll see you all tomorrow.